acting and using fermions in a two-body color code model. This is a joint work with Medical Gayan, who is a PhD student at Sharif University in Tehran, and Miguel Ángel Martín Delgado, my former advisor at Complutense University. So I will start motivating the model. We'll talk about anions, stabilizer codes, and two-body models. Then we'll discuss the model itself, and third time, StreetNet concept of motion, the THR. Then I will continue with a bosonic mapping that allows to understand how in this system we have emergence and unique fermions, and how can we get effectively color code. And finally, I will discuss some future work. So, motivation. Well, in our everyday 3D world, as you know, we only deal with fermions and bosons. This is so because it's changing twice a pair of particles. It's a topologically trivial operation. This, in 2D, this is no longer true. And it may be the case that we find particles with other statistics, which we call anions. So if this is our 2D world, and this is, oh, yeah, this is the flow of time, we may exchange two particles in two different ways. Either I take the blue particle to the front or to the back. And if this is different, I say that they are anions. In the most simple case, the difference between both between both ways is just a phase. And in such a case, we say that the anions are abelian. Now, anions are a signature of topological order, which, although not completely understood, well, we know which are some of its features, and these are that we should find some topological degeneracy in the ground subspace, and that excitation should be gapped and localized. So these are our anions. Now the question is it really possible to find a topological order in nature, or is it just a theoretical construct? Well, we are lucky. We can find such anions, for example, in physical systems such as the quantum Hall effect. But another approach would be to just directly engineer suitable quantum Hamiltonian models. For example, as proposed by Peter Soler, we could use polar molecules in the optical line. But for that, we need simple enough Hamiltonians, and in particular, some of the simplest examples of models that give rise to topological order are those that are obtained from local stabilizer codes. These models are single-half local models. The Hamiltonian is just a sum of certain terms that are called the stabilizers, which are elements of the Pauli group on our qubits. This stabilizer will generate an abelian group and cannot contain the element minus one. When this is true, the ground subspace of the Hamiltonian is given by this condition, so that it corresponds to the subspace where all these stabilizers have eigenvalue 1. When any of these conditions is violated, we have an excitation, and so that these excitations are gapped and have two units of energy. Then the seminal example of such topological stabilizer code is the well-known Torrey code. This is a system which lives in a square lattice. So we place our qubits on the vertices of the lattice and choose as the stabilizers certain placket operators. These placket operators are a product of X and X foil operators here on the sides and set foil operators on top and bottom. So the Hamiltonian is just the sum of these placket terms. In the Torrey code, there exist two kinds of excitations. In order to label them, we have to first color the lattice as a chessboard, and then we say that we distinguish between the excitations in each of the two sets of plaquettes. There exists a total of three non-trivial topological charges in the model, so the basic excitations are bosons, and if we put them together, they give a fermion. There exists a non-trivial topological phase between the two bosons, and when we put together any two charges which are equal, we get just the trivial. Yes.
Two different colors correspond to the fact that one has used sigma x to make the parquet for the blue part, and sigma z to do the yellow part.
No, here I am explaining the Wenner's type, which is that you have just one kind of bracket operator, mm-hmm. which mixes X and Z.
Oh, and then mixes X.
Yes.
Okay.
And then, I mean, it's kind of, it's a bit different because you have to template more with symmetry, but basically it's the same.
Okay.
Yes. So, yeah. So all the plaquettes are the same in the Hamiltonian, but then in practice, the excitations in different types of plaquettes are not equivalent.
Sorry, can you tell me what do they actually interpret those figures on the bottom? What do you mean when you draw two circles?
Yeah, I'm just saying that the topological charge attached to such basic excitation, to an excitation that lives in a blue plaquette, so to say, is a boson, right?
You went on an excitation in the last slide. Is that right?
Sorry.
Good. Can you go back one slide?
Yes.
So maybe if you just say a bit more about what an excitation is here.
Okay. So
this particular model.
Yeah. So in general, in this excitation model, in the ground state, all these operators are taking only one. So excitations correspond to this operator having a minus one given, which will have two units of energy. So then, because our operators here go with plaquettes, we can have an excitation at each plaquette. So this is what I mean here, but I'm also saying that excitations at in different kinds of plaquettes. Yeah.
You were just continuing to answer, so I asked later.
Okay. So. Yeah, the point is that if you take any excitation, right, you can locally transform it into a basic excitation, which is just either one excitation of this kind or one of this kind of the two together, and nothing more. Right? So those are all the kind, well, either or not quantum excitation at all. Right? So that you have three non-trivial topological charges which correspond to these three cases, right? Either only the blue, only the yellow, or the two together. Yeah.
Who noted this, you need to fill in a little bit more. I'd be grateful. I mean, a blue excitation is an excitation at a blue side of
a blue plaquette.
Okay, so then what does it mean to have an excitation with the yellow and blue on top of each other?
Oh, I just mean that in some region of the space you can have both there, right? They could be. I'm just. Okay, so.
They're not actually on top of each other, they're next to each other.
They can be next to each other or not. So I mean, as long as you consider them together, that's it. In the sense of a charge that cannot be changed locally, right? So the main point is that if you have a set of excitations and you just try to simplify them as much as possible locally, there are four possibilities. I mean, you arrive to four possibilities, which is either to have nothing, to have a blue excitation, a yellow one, or both. That's the idea.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that those are the four. Well, possible topological charges. Then you have, as I was saying, this topological phase, this mutual significant statistics, and this goes to fuse the charges. Yeah.
Hector, is this now the equivalent of the toric code model? In the sense that, say, if you do Hadamards on a sublattice, say, top row and then third row,
yes.
That gets you the normal toric code Hamiltonian.
Yes.
Okay.
I wanted to introduce it this way because it emphasizes the relationship between the toric code and the color codes.
Okay.
So another example of topological stereoisotropic codes are color codes, which were initially introduced because they have enhanced computational capabilities. In particular, they allow us to perform transversally deprecates, which are very important in quantum information tasks such as teleportation. Color codes live in a honeycomb lattice. Again, we place one qubit at its vertex. But now we have two kinds of plaquette operators. So they can be either a product of X Paulis on these vertices or a product of Y Paulis. So then the Hamiltonian will contain two terms per plaquette.
The last one must be Z or it's a
plaquette? Oh, that should be Y. Yeah,
that's an error. Oh.
Then again, to label the basic excitations, we have to color the lattice. And in this case, we do it with three colors. But now, because we have two kinds of plaquette operators per plaquette, we also have two kinds of excitations. So either X for the X term or Y for the Y term. It should be noticed that the lattice is trivial with three links meeting at its vertex, and that the plugins are triggerable. Then, when we have, in general, libraries with such properties, we call it a topolex. And the point is that you can define color codes in any such topolex. In color codes, we have.
Sorry, can I ask a question? So I realize I'm confused. Previously, I thought the reason you had two colors was because in your model, you could have the vertical, the top and the bottom be sigma x's, or the left and the right be sigma x's. So I saw that there was a difference between the blue and the yellow plaquettes. But now with your new operators, they were all x or all y, and so I don't see the significance of the colors anymore.
Yeah.
And it's just a way of breaking this up into three
The reason to introduce coloring in both cases is the same. That it is completely impossible to. So if I give you a state with a yellow excitation, yeah, you cannot locally transform it into a state with a blue excitation. Right? But you can move this yellow excitation from here to here, to here, whatever, right? So they live in different sets of.
I see.
And the same thing.
So in this model, in both cases, the x's are the horizontal axis and the z's are vertical, right?
Yes. So in this model, it's the same. If I give you an x reference excitation, you will be able to move it here or here, but not to the green or to the blue one. So that's why, I mean, color is not in the Hamiltonian, but kind of here. OK, so all the basic excitations are bosons. Then if you put together two of the same color but different kind, you again get a boson. And the rest are fermions, which come in two families. Again, you put together two charges of the same type, you get the trivial charge. And you have semi-unique mutual statistics whenever you consider charges which have different color and different type. In all the rest of cases, the phase is trivial. And it's interesting to notice that each of these families of fermions is closed under fusion. So this means that if I put together this charge and this one, I will get the third one. And also that fermions in different families do not see each other. So they have bosonic relative statistics. But among them, in the same family, they have semi-unique mutual statistics. Now, in both cases, both in the toric and in the color code, the models are many-body. So in the case of the toric code, it was 4 local, and for the color code, it was 6 local. This makes it very difficult to engineer them directly, and we need something else. Then Kitaev came up with a two-body model in the honeycomb lattice that gives rise effectively to a toric code in one of the coupling regimes. This is the model. It's again a qubit. A two-local qubit model in the such a lattice. And we have three kinds of couplings which depend on the direction of the link. So at vertical links, we have set interactions, and here we have x-axis interactions and one-way, y-way interactions. A very important feature of this model is that it has a plaquette constants of motion, so it exists a We can find a suitable product of Paulis here in these vertices, which commute with the Hamiltonian. Indeed, with each of the terms of the Hamiltonian. More generally, one can take any closed path and obtain a constant of motion point. In addition, the model is exactly solvable. This is related to it, the fact that it is a trivalent lattice. And one finds through the solution that you have emergent free fermions that live in the honeycomb. If we add a magnetic field to the model, it even contains a phase with non-abelian anions. Unfortunately, these anions are not enough for universal quantum computing. Well, and finally, this model could have good chances to be implementable, for example, with these polar molecules in optical lattice. So, as I was mentioning, in a particular regime, when the set couplings are much stronger than the X and Y ones, we get an effective toric code. So the basic idea is that when this coupling is very big, we only have an effective qubit degree of freedom for each of these bonds, so that we go from this geometry to this one. And then it turns out that the effective Hamiltonian just gives you the four-way terms that you need for the code. Then the question, the natural question is it possible to do something similar for color codes? And the answer is yes, and that's the reason for this talk. So this is the model. As the Honeycomb model, it's a two-local qubit model in the so-called true binaries. We again have one qubit at each vertex, and these three kinds of XX, YY, or set interactions will depend on the color of the link. So we have set ones in the blue ones, and then X and Y1. Notice that set interactions form triangles. Now, so the important, well, there are two things. First, we will see that in a suitable coupling regime, this model gives rise to an effective color code model, and then, surprisingly, it also has features that are not present in honeycomb-like models. So, it has an exact topological degeneracy in all coupling regimes. In particular, it's a 4-2G in a surface of genus G. This topological degeneracy is related to the appearance of certain streamlet intervals of motion. Instead of emergent free fermions, as in the Kitaj model, we will have three families of strongly interacting fermions with semi-unic mutual statistics, so they are really enios. And it seems that because of the appearance of these interacting fermions, the model is not exactly solvable. And finally, we have a set 2 times set 2 local symmetry instead of just a set 2 symmetry. Yeah, this is just the minor one in the phase. This just means that here you have minus one. That's it.
Blue and red around each other, you get a minus one.
Yeah, but that's equivalent to, so to go from here to here, you have to do a compute.
Right. No, but the point is that the blue alone has bosonic statistics, the red alone is bosonic, but when you move around each other, you get a minus one.
Well, yeah.
But I mean, it's not necessary that they all have bosonic, right?
In this case, if you say that they have mutual semi-unic, this just refers to.
Another question.
Yes.
So this model is not exactly solvable.
Well, we don't know. I mean.
So do we know the? How do we know the genus?
Ah, yeah. In fact, well, that's we will see it right now, right? So, but it's not. I mean, when I say that it has this genus, it means that it has at least this genus. Then it can be. So you don't know the exact. So to uncover this degeneracy thing, we have to discuss the integrals of motion that appear in the model, just as the strings that appear in the Kitaj model. So in this case, we also have some drawings which are more complicated. And so these are the drawings locally, and to these drawings we are going to attach products of Pauli's. So the idea is that at each of these drawings there is just one kind of link, so in this case the green one, the red one, and the blue ones here, which are going out of the drawing. So we are going to put the Pauli operator that corresponds to that link, so that automatically the product of all the Paulis will commute with this interaction here. And because this commutes with the ones that are inside the drawing, then in the end they will commute with all the interactions. So okay, so if we complete such drawings, we always get concept of motion, in particular in each plaquette. We can do three different drawings. And then it turns out that, so notice that in this drawing, green links are not inside, you have the red ones, and this is just a much simpler one, which is just a product of sets. Okay, so the product of these two operators gives me the third one, so that I only have two independent constant motion, which gives me this set 2 times set 2 local symmetry. Yeah, so these lines are supposed to go around the angles.
Okay.
And then the other ones connect them. And the point is that, okay, so the point is that the local appearance should be always like this. If you keep that,
then the any operator that you.
Sorry, it's like what?
I mean, locally, they should look like this, and then, how to say this? Lines must be completed, right? So I can't have, I don't know, a wavy line that ends here. I mean, it has to continue.
Right.
I mean, the drawing has to be complete, right? But that's
okay. And the X, Y, and Z are always connected with the pictures that look like that, or?
Yes.
Okay.
So whenever I see.
And the way I can generalize this is that for the X, the wiggly line is always on the green,
yes.
And the Y is always on the red.
Yes. Okay, so I was saying that we have these two independent bucket operators which give me this symmetry. And more generally, I can have arbitrary drawings. They will look like strings, right? Strings with branching points. And well, if I consider such drawings in a simply connected piece of the lattice, it turns out that the operator that I get is just a combination of a product of Plaquette operators. But if my drawing is somehow topologically non-trivial, then I get independent constant motions. As a particular case of these complicated strings, I have just these strings, which I pseudonymize, and it's enough to consider such strings because a string net entails motional products of such strings. Then, for a given path, so suppose that these three are the same path, I can have three different kinds of drawings, just as in Plaquette. And again, it happens that the product of two of them gives me the third one, so that I only have two constants of motion per path. In order to distinguish this three classes, it's useful to color the lattice, and in particular to show which is the underlying two collex structure of this lattice. So the point is that if we regard each triangle as a site, we see that there is underlying honeycomb lattice in our Ruby lattice. More generally, if we take any other two collex and kind of proceed to the contrary, we'll get a model with all these features that I'm discussing. So with this coloring, now I can color the string. So in each string, I can always couple triangles like this. And then it turns out that all the pairs of triangles lie in the same kind of link. So in this case, they are all blue links. So I will say that I have a blue string. Operators of the same color will always commute, but when I have string operators of different color that cross once or an odd number of times, they will anti-commute. This is a very important property which does not appear in honeycomb-like models, and well, this is the reason for the NLS.
Sorry,
but,
I heard this a little bit. Are the two blues connected? The blues on the triangles and the blues on the hexagons?
No.
So I think of them as just different colors.
The point is that I don't want to use too many colors, because then you have problems with the magazines, right?
Okay.
But
okay.
They are completely disconnected, so it's
okay. Fine.
Right. So consider, for example, a torus. In a torus, we have four independent string constants of motion. So I take in this case these two blue strings and these two red strings. I don't take the green one because the green one is a combination of the others. Then if I check the algebraic properties of these operators, I just notice that they correspond to the Pauli operators on two qubits. And then this immediately implies that we have an exact four called the NLC.
So
that
they commute with the Hamiltonian form.
Yes. That we have such a four called the NLC. And more generally, in surfaces of linear tree, we have this 4G for the units. Okay, so any question after now? Now we discuss the bosonic mapping, which allows us to understand this emergent particles and the effective mode. So to motivate the mapping, let me consider the case where all couplings are positive and x and y couplings are much more smaller than the set one. In the extreme case, where x and y couplings are zero, the blue triangles just detach from each other, and each triangle is just a ferromagnetic system. Right? So we can distinguish four different states for the stabilizers, for the terms in the Hamiltonian. So either they are all positive, in which case we are in the minimum energy state, or we can have that two of them have a minus sign. We will distinguish these three cases, these colors, and so say that here we have no particle, and here we have a particle either in a red, green, or blue state. Now, this extreme case suggests an exact mapping of the system, where we substitute each triangle with a side. At each side, we place a Hartree boson, which can have these three states, and also an effective spin. So on this side, I have the original three spins, and on this side, I have the effective spin and the Hartree boson. So I perform this mapping. And as a result, I get a new Hamiltonian with this form. We will have a constant, then this Q, which counts the number of Hartree bosons that I have, the number of particles, and then these many terms, which involve both effective spin and Hartree boson degrees of freedom. So, what do these terms do to the Hartree bosons? Well, these T terms are Hopping terms. So, for example, here we have this green Hopping. The U are fusion terms. So, in this case, for example, we have that a red and a blue particles fuse to give a green one. Here we have a color exchanging term, and this will be the annihilation of two identical particles. Right. So, a typical interaction process with this Hamiltonian will look something like this. Our particles move around, fuse, split, or whatever. The thing is that as the Hopping and fusion terms have the same strength, the interaction will be strong. Notice also that the interaction occurs through three particle vectors. Now, up to now, the color of the Hartree bosons was just a label, but it is possible to regard it as a set two times a two charge by through this correspondence. So we just regard colors as elements of the group. This is the trigger. And then with considering it this way, it turns out that the Hamiltonian preserves the total color charge. So for example, when we fuse two particles, we will amount to take the product of the corresponding charges in this point of view. The total color charge in the system constrains the possible configurations of the plaquette constant of motion. And well, we will regard this this plaquette constant of motion as vortex degrees of freedom. So when we fix this constant of motion, these vortices, and also the global fluxes, we can completely forget about the spin degrees of freedom, because we can label the states in the sector just with the occupancies of the Hartree bosons. Right? So if I tell you where are the bosons, you know everything. Then the point is, which are the quasi-particles that emerge from this Hartree boson degrees of freedom? So to answer this, we follow Levin and Wen, and use the Hopping terms of the Hamiltonian. So what we do is, we consider a process like this, where we have two blue Hartree bosons. We move one of them here, this one here, and finally the one here to this place. This will give us a phase, which in our case is minus one. This means that our particles are fermions. We have three families distinguished by the color. Now, we know that you cannot destroy three fermions at a time. So it must be the case that our fermions are not really fermions, but rather some units. Also, they should be subject to a non-trivial gauge field. So to study both these two things, we again follow Levin and Wen and recover both aspects by Hopping a fermion around the region and seeing which is the phase that we obtain. If we do this, we learn two things. First, we learn that each family of fermions is subject to a different set to gauge field, which is given by the vortices. In fact, this is nothing but saying that each of the colors corresponds to a different representation of the gauge group. And also, fermions with different color charts have same unique mutual statistic, which explains why we can have these three particle vertices. Okay, so now I will explain how does the effective color plot appear. For this, we need a regime where X and Y couplings are much smaller than Z1. Then in this regime, the fermions that I have been discussing are high energy excitations. And inspired by the work of Julien Vidal collaborators in the context of Kita's Konikon model, we choose to use for the perturbation the perturbative continuous unitary transformations method. This method produces at a given order an effective Hamiltonian which commutes with a number of particles. In particular, we will be interested in the lowest energy sector where we have no particles. And in this sector, only effective spin matter. Indeed, we find that at ninth order, we find such a Hamiltonian where these are just, so on effective spins, these are just the two terms that appear in the color code. And this will be the product of the two of them, which does not spoil the thing, so that we really get a color code Hamiltonian. Yeah,
it's so a lot. What happens to the first eight orders?
Sorry? What happens with the others? They do not give effective terms.
Yes.
So the first non-trivial term would be, let's see, this one. And then this is sixth order, and this are ninth order.
Your expansion parameter is the ratio of couplings, Jx over Jc.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's a small effect.
Yes.
But if you're
yes. It's a small effect. Okay. So
the excitations of the model correspond to the vortices of the system, so they are capped and localized at plaquettes, because this is the color code. And then, if one continues the expansion, one finds terms, higher order terms, that are products of vortex operators, which give rise to short range vortex interactions. One can imagine that as this short range interaction becomes long range, the order will be destroyed. Now, it is instructive to notice that high energy fermions and the low energy topological charges can be related to a local operation. So it turns out that a red high energy fermion corresponds to such a fermion in the color code, and similarly for the others. Then, if one checks the properties of these fermions here in this for this topological order, it turns out that they match exactly with the properties that these anions have. And also, we can check which kind of charges are created if we consider open-ended string net intervals of motion. So what happens is that if we just cut a red string, we will find such a charge, similarly for the others. The point is that these are again fermions, but they are in a different family. So recall that we have two families of fermions in the color code. Then the ones here are different in the other family, and then this means that they do not see each other, which kind of explains why this is a constant motion. So finally, we can use this perturbative method to study higher energy sectors. The simplest one is the one particle sector, where we have no interactions. And what we find out is that at first order, our fermions can only jump around a given plaquette. So if it is a blue fermion, it will jump around a blue plaquette. And only at second order do we find terms that take the fermion from one blue plaquette to another. So the main contribution to the gap comes from this orbital motion, and it turns out that as the couplings, x and y couplings grow, the gap closes. So in the end, we will find a phase transition, and we think that this could be some form of anion condensation. We just don't know. Okay, so just to finish, well, up to now we have only studied a particular phase of the system, the one that gives rise to color codes. But since we know that we have this topological degeneracy for couplings, well, this somehow anticipates a rich phase diagram. We can complicate even this diagram more by explicitly breaking the color symmetry that the model exhibits in such a way that we keep the important features of the model. Well, in particular, it will be very interesting to check whether it is possible to find a phase with non-abelian anions and which kind of computational capabilities they have if they exist. And finally, since it seems that the model is not solvable, probably numerical calculations will be needed. So these are the conclusions. We have introduced a two-body spin one-half model in the Ravillaris. The model exhibits an exact topological degeneracy in all coupling regimes. Using a bosonic mapping, we have discussed the emergence of strongly interacting anionic fermions, and a particular coupling regime gives rise to effective color code. So thanks for your attention.
There's something I didn't understand about the degeneracy. So how do you know that when you apply one of these non-contractible loops onto the ground state, you go to an orthogonal state? Because this is necessary to say that there is a degeneracy of different states.
But this follows from the structure of the algebra, right?
I mean, it depends on the original state whether it's orthogonal, but I mean, it potentially is orthogonal. I mean, for instance, there's a state that's a superposition of those two states, right?
I mean, I don't see how you can have.
So imagine that your Hamiltonian had explicitly these big operators in the Hamiltonian. Mm. Then you would have only one state that could be the superposition of the two.
Yeah, but what's maybe more important than underlying this is that, as it turns out, I mean, this is a stabilizer code to start with. So the set of operators that act on the coded space is always going to be isomorphic to the full polyalgebra on some of the work you do.
Yes.
So that's what it means when it says it comes from the underlying algebra.
No, so what I'm saying is that because the model is not exactly solvable, the ground state could be like the one of a Hamiltonian that contains also the big loops, and so be just a unique ground state.
What do you mean? So
imagine that I take the toric code,
right,
plus
sure,
I add the big loops operator.
Sure.
So then I would have only one ground state.
Right? Sure.
So and the algebra is still the same, right? It's just the ground
state. Right. I don't see what the connection between that and being exactly solvable. I mean, the point is, you know, that's not true because there's an algebra of operators that commutes with the Hamiltonian. Right. So if you did that, if you added this big term,
yeah,
then so in the toric code, you have the things that wrap this way or this way, right? And so you'd have half of them would not commute with this new term. Mm-hmm. Right, so you'd be shrinking the algebra. But in this case, you know that you have this full algebra of things, so it has to be degeneracy.
Right. Okay. So regardless of the fact Okay.
I mean, from the algebra, you can reconstruct
okay.
everything.
Okay. Okay, but it could still be that the system is not only topological degenerate, but it has an exponential degeneracy because you don't have enough levels to level the states. Because now all the packets do not come. So it could have two to the n.
Yes.
To the sum n, n over something.
This is just a minimal degeneration. Well, in fact, for example, in the color code sector, you have a 16-fold degeneracy in the torus.
No, what I'm saying is that you could get a degeneracy that depends on the size of the system.
Yes, also. But I'm just this is just like the minimum.
I just sort of want to set that straight, because probably I got it wrong. I have a question about the seismic effects. So I thought you said, sort of, if you start with your two local Hamiltonian, then you get, under a certain condition, your color code Hamiltonian at ninth order. But then I thought you said, okay, now let's discuss all the different sectors of zero particles, one particle.
I mean, just one, because then it's so complicated.
But then you said, I think I remember, that a Hopping term was second order.
Yes.
So that is a much stronger effect than the sort of the energy scale for the separation of the sectors?
Yeah, but that happens in higher energy sectors. So, I mean, if the gap is very big. I mean, this is an effect which is in another sector, which is, in principle, much more higher.
So what's the separation in energy of the sectors, of the sample?
Also, in the units, so
in lambda, in your expansion.
Yeah, so if you fix as... Okay, let's see. So for the particular... For this particular choice of Jz, it's just one. So that's the gap to the high energy set.
Can you maybe draw us some kind of schematic of what you know about the energy levels?
Yeah, so.
Yeah.
Oh, is it us?
Number six.
So our first order, it will be something like the low energy sector, and then the first sector will be something with energy one, but then with, this degeneracy should be broken by this orbital motion, so you will start having something like this. And then, so, but these are, I mean, as you increase the couplings, this will move downwards. Then you also have, I mean, because of higher order terms, you have this motion between the general levels, so that it will deform something like this, blah, blah. And then you also have this degeneracy here, which is being broken but at a much higher order, right?
That's a degeneracy of your code space down there?
This is the color code.
Yeah, and it is. Uh-huh. Okay.
And the hopping is the.
This is the hopping.
In that sector.
And then this is the second order hopping, which.
So it is still true that the splitting of the degeneracy goes exponentially down the size of the system, right?
You mean the argument for an extra term in the Hamiltonian, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, even in your effective theory, because your effective theory is like not the whole, right?
Yeah, it's in the effective theory.
Sorry. So that the splitting is very small.
Yeah, it's very
surprised
small.
By the size.
Yeah, it's really small.
Surprised by the size of the system?
No,
it's ninth order for the basic theory.
But it's independent
small,
of, yeah.
But it's
independent
of size.
No, I mean the splitting. The splitting of the ground state.
But you mean, oh, you mean the other. I mean, splitting which will came from other things that will be suppressed by. Mm.
So I understand that the nth order term is also splitting the ground state?
No, I mean, that's.
Yeah, the nth order term is really the plaquette. The plaquette term for the color code.
Why it's splitting the ground state? Why it's different from one topological sector to the other?
I don't get what you
mean. So I thought that, yeah, that, no, that is a degenerate ground state, right?
Yeah, but this is a unit ground state at first order.
But that degenerate ground state at first order contains things which violate some of the
yes.
code conditions.
Everything.
Right?
I mean,
okay. So if you include all the higher order, at least ninth order of perturbation theory, then that state is split.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Another question. So you didn't mention it today, but sure you have thought about it or maybe you've written about it. The codes by themselves. You said they allow to do the Clifford gates in a topological fashion. So you mean really not just transversally having two such surfaces, but really by the, I don't know, by sort of moving the handles around in such a surface. Is it
mean,
so?
I mean, in color codes?
Yes.
Whether is it possible to?
Yeah.
Yeah, it would be possible to, but just, I mean, just C-nodes, right? As in the three codes.
Aha, just C-nodes, not
yeah.
the whole Clifford group, so then.
Yeah, because the Clifford group really comes from transversal things, which are not.
I thought maybe it's different in your model. I wouldn't know a priori.
The thing is that you only deform strings.
Yeah.
And then because of the
okay.
CSS structure.
Yeah, okay, same story. Oh, okay.
So that's it.
Questions?
I couldn't see you.